Mahmud, Macedonia to Serbia, 2015, 14 to 15 days from home. Mahmud felt like he was back in Syria. Policemen with guns guarded the border from Greece into Macedonia, and he felt dirty again. Unwanted. Illegal. Even without travel papers, Mahmud and his family had been able to exchange their Syrian pounds for euros and buy train tickets from Athens to Thessaloniki, and from there to a little Greek town near the border of Macedonia. Now, they were headed for the Macedonian town of Djedelija, where they hoped to catch a train north to Serbia, and from there to Hungary. But first, they had to find a way to sneak across the border. Mahmud pointed out a little tangle of tents and laundry lines just off the gravel road, and Mahmud's father pulled them into the camp to plan their next move. It was another little refugee village, the kind of makeshift town Mahmud had been seen again and again on the road out of Syria. Mahmud and his father hunkered down behind a trash barrel and watched the border crossing. The Macedonian police weren't turning people away, but they might be checking papers, and Mahmud's family hadn't waited in Athens for official travel permits. Mahmud's dad pulled out his iPhone and consulted the map. "This whole area is farmland," his father said. "Flatland. Too easy to be caught." He scrolled sideways on the map, and Mahmud leaned in closer. "It looks like there's a forest here to the west," Dad said. "They can't have every meter of the border guarded. We'll slip through at night. Once we're in Macedonia, we'll be all right. Where's your mother?" Mahmud looked up. Mom was where she always was, working her way through the tents, looking for Hannah. Hannah wasn't there, though, and she wasn't at any of the other little clusters of refugee tents they passed as they hiked farther into the countryside. At some place he'd picked from the map on his iPhone, Mahmud's father led them off a dirt road into a dark forest. It was late, well after midnight, and Mahmud was weary from walking. But they still had 2 hours to walk to the Macedonian border. Walid raised his arms to be carried, and Dad hefted him up against his shoulder. Mahmud bristled. Walid was being a baby. He was too big to be carried. Mahmud was tired too, but nobody was carrying him. They walked along in silence, their way lit only by the occasional glow of the phone screen as Dad checked their position. The forest was full of tall pine trees that crowded almost everything else out, and the ground was covered with brown pine needles that smelled like a car air freshener. Somewhere in the forest, an owl screeched, and Mahmud heard the scurrying of small animals. Every rustle made Mahmud jump. Every scuffle gave him goosebumps. He was a city boy, used to the lights and sounds of traffic. Here, every sound was like a gunshot in the unearthly dark and quiet. It terrified Mahmud. At last, they emerged from the dark woods and found the train station. It was a small, two-story, mustard-colored building with a burgundy roof and rounded gables. It was also packed with people. Hundreds of people slept outside, using their backpacks and trash bags as pillows. They filled the train platform and the sidewalks in front of the station, and some even slept between the tracks. Plastic bottles and empty bags and discarded wrappers littered the ground. Mahmud watched his father's shoulders sag. Mahmud felt the same way. But then his father stood taller and hiked Walid up higher on his shoulder. "Hey, at least we know we're on the right track," he said. He grinned at Mahmud. The right track? Get it? Mahmud got it. He just didn't think any of this was funny. No? Nothing? His father said. I guess I need to train you better. Mahmud still didn't laugh. He was too tired. Mahmud's mother had already left them, stepping carefully among the sleeping refugees like a ghost, searching for Hannah. The train station looks closed, Mahmud's father told him. We'll have to find some place to sleep. We'll come back in the morning and see if we can buy tickets. They found a nearby hotel listed on TripAdvisor, and they collected Mahmud's mother and set out for the inn on foot. Mahmud wouldn't wait to climb into a real bed. He felt like he could sleep for days. A car came up behind them, and this time Mahmud didn't jump out in front of it. But it slowed down and stopped beside them anyway. You need taxi? The man said in broken Arabic. No, Mahmud's father said. We're just going to the hotel. Hotel, much money, the man said. You go to Serbia? I take you in taxi. 25 euros each. Mahmud did the math. 100 euros was a lot of money. Almost 24,000 Syrian pounds. But a taxi ride straight to Serbia? Without spending the night? Or longer? In Macedonia? Mahmud's parents huddled together and Mahmud listened in. Train tickets were likely cheaper, and Mom worried about accepting a ride from a strange man in a country they didn't know. But Dad argued there wasn't another train until at least tomorrow, and there were already so many people waiting for the train at the station. We're all tired, and a taxi gets us closer to Germany. Sleeping on the ground doesn't, Mahmud threw in. That's the deciding vote, then, Dad said. We'll take the car. It was a good decision. 2 hours and 100 euros later, they were at the Serbian border. It was still dark, but there were no border guards where the driver dropped them off. No roads, either. Mahmud had slept in a little in the car, but he felt like a zombie as he shambled with his family along the railroad tracks that would take them across the border from Macedonia to the nearest Serbian town. Since they were traveling, they were permitted to skip their early morning prayers. They staggered into a town just after sunup. Mahmud thought that if he didn't lie down somewhere and sleep, he would pass out on his feet and fall flat on his face. But there were even more refugees at this train station than there had been in Macedonia. And here, there were no tents and no hotel rooms. People slept on the platform of the station or outside in the fields. There were no toilets either, and no markets or restaurants. What little the local Serbs had, they were charging a fortune for. One man was selling water bottles for 5 euros apiece. A group of men sat around a power strip, charging their phones as though they were huddled around a campfire. Mahmud had seen scenes like this everywhere along the route from Athens to Germany. He and his family paused just long enough to recharge their own phones again, and then they were on the move once more. Mahmud was so tired he wanted to cry. His father found them a bus to Belgrade, and Mahmud was thankful for the few hours' sleep, uncomfortable though they were. It was almost sundown when they arrived in the Serbian capital, but they still couldn't stop. The police were there. The police there were raiding hotels for illegal refugees, so Dad found another taxi driver who promised to take them the 2 hours farther into the Hungarian border. Taxis were expensive, but so was trying to stay overnight in a city that didn't want you. The silver four-door Volkswagen was driven by a middle-aged, olive-skinned Serbian man with a neatly trimmed black beard. He promised to get them to Hungary and keep them away from the police for 30 euros apiece. More than it had cost them to cross all of Macedonia. It was a tight fit in the car, with Mahmoud, his mother, and his father crammed into the back seat, and Walid in his father's lap. This new driver seemed to find every rut and hole in the road and send them flying into each other. But none of that mattered to Mahmoud. He was asleep almost as soon as he'd closed his eyes, and he only woke again when he realized the car wasn't moving. Had it really been 2 hours already? He felt like he'd just gone to sleep. Mahmoud's eyes fluttered and he looked out the windows. He expected to see the lights of a Serbian border town, another tent city. Instead, they were stopped in the middle of a lonely stretch of highway surrounded by dark, empty fields, and the taxi driver was leaning over the back seat with a pistol aimed straight at them.